welcome to the Snowy's Camping Show with Ben and Lauren. How are you, Ben?
I'm well.
Good.
How are you?
I am well.
It's good.
Full stop.
I still can't get used to this new start where we don't have the music leading us in. Our viewers hear the music, but we just kind of sit here and then just randomly start the show.
And you're probably begrudgingly sitting here anyway, considering you've just been on a bit of a holiday. So I begrudge you for being on a holiday. Anyway.
I enjoy my work.
Yes. Work is pretty good.
Yep.
We're lucky. So don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening to your podcast, whether that be through your favorite podcast app or on YouTube. And also jump into, if you're on Facebook, the Snowy's Camping Banter Facebook group that we have now. And today's episode is one that was not generated but sort of prompted, I guess, by the Facebook group. So it's a really great place to be just to talk about all things generally camping, but also if there are things that you want to know about or conversations that you want to have, we can probably end up doing an episode on it.
Yep. This one's been on the to-do list.
It has been on the to-do list for a while, and it was sort of something we had planned to do earlier in the year, but a post in the Facebook group with someone asking about hiking poles sort of made me be like, yeah, we haven't done that episode. It got pushed to the back burner. Why don't we just do it now?
So here we are.
Why do you need them? And how do you know which one you need, basically, is what we're covering today.
It's a good question. I probably, whenever I've sold hiking poles in the past, I've quite often said it's probably the most over-engineered thing in the shop, right, because it's a stick.
Just get a stick, yeah.
But it's obviously engineered to be far more comfortable and functional than your average stick. And manufacturers have changed this stick into a lot of different formats, right, to suit a lot of different end uses. And I'll probably sound like I'm dumbing it down a bit, but they're really useful. And I wouldn't go on a long trek without a pair of hiking poles, and I'd take them over a stick any day. I've actually hiked with a stick before. I remember doing many years ago,
did
the Kokoda track, and it was a long time ago, and one of our guides literally chopped a straight bit of whatever tree it was on the side. So not a tree, but a small plant and sharpened one end and gave it to me. And that's what I walked with the whole time. Yeah. In the younger days thinking, I don't need hiking poles. It's ridiculous. But then got hiking poles and went, okay.
Hiking poles are pretty
really
great.
Good. Yeah. Mm. And now I wouldn't go on a long walk, particularly on a walk with a backpack without them, for many reasons that we'll talk about today.
I'm sort of in the same boat as you in the sense that, you know, didn't really ever see the need for them, and often, especially in my younger years, was like, they're for old people. Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, the whole Nordic walking craze was like, no, they're for idiots. not that people who Nordic walk are idiots, but do you know what I mean? Like, just as a young person and you see people using them and how they're using them and you're just like, that is so not for me. And then I remember a hike that I did at one point, and it was quite a long one. It was a couple of days, and there was a part at the end of it where we were sort of going along this track, which was quite close to the edge of a cliff. And I was just like, it is quite possible that I just might teeter off the edge here because I'm just that exhausted and my legs are so tired and I'm just feeling very unstable, and a pair of hiking poles would do really good right now.
We've got a few points around why you might need them, but I want to jump on the main reason why I like them is on top of everything that we'll mention is that I felt like it introduced not just my legs to carrying me through a hike, but my entire body. So it had my arms moving where my arms would otherwise probably be tucked up under my shoulder straps and adjusting them all the time. Instead, they're moving. I'm swinging them because I've got to swing the poles to move with. I'm using those arm muscles. Alleviating some of the pressure off my legs.
Because as if your calves need alleviated pressure. They're like the size of my face.
I don't know why, but let's not get into that now.
Okay.
And because your shoulders are moving, your neck and I find all my neck muscles and everything stay looser because my whole upper body, whole upper body is now part of my hike or my trek. Rather than my upper body being largely stationary and my legs doing all the work. So that's why I really like trekking poles.
And I guess your upper body, whilst also being largely stationary, it's sort of tense against your pack and you're trying to use your core and like the tenseness in your upper body to keep yourself sort of stable and and balanced and things like that. So, yeah, the poles do take a bit of that out. And I also like because, you know, obviously the weight distribution and the relieving of stress and all of that sort of stuff is an element that we've got here on why you need it. But also things like when you're going downhill or you're going uphill, you can really sort of lean on your poles with your arms, and your arms and your actual chest and shoulder, that can sort of pull your body up or suspension your body down, and actually really does reduce the overall fatigue on your legs in that sense as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're using your arms to pull yourself when you're going uphill. Just that it's only a little bit of extra. I think I've maybe many years ago used the percentage of 25% maybe, but that's probably very dependent on how you hike and the environment that you're in. But yeah, you're taking that uphill pressure off your leg, pushing you up. So your arm's doing a bit of work, and downhill definitely takes that jarring off your knees because you've got that extra bit of sort of resistance, I suppose, before you hit the ground.
Yeah.
With your foot, so
obviously, you know, we've mentioned that stability and balance. So if you're going down rocky, everyone's been down a track, down an incline. Well, I assume if you're someone who enjoys hiking, you have anyway, you know, where you're sort of potentially having a hop from rock to rock, and it's, you know what I mean? Yep. You're just not fully stable. And that's even just on day hikes. And you add to the fact that you might be carrying a pack with ideally up to 20% of your body weight, which is also quite heavy, and that's swinging around on your back and things like that. They're really good to just help you keep your balance and be a bit more sure-footed.
Even on flat ground, end of the day, you're tired, your feet are getting sloppy. It only takes a small irregular part of the trail that you're walking in to maybe cause an ankle to roll.
Mm-hmm.
Having those poles there gives you that quick reaction to put a pole out and soften the blow on your ankle or your knee or whatever. So,
and I think it's not injuries. One of those things where, you know, I think often I used to be like, oh, but then you're just having to haul these poles with you when you're tired, but it isn't necessarily like that. And I think sometimes when you do have trekking poles, sort of like riding a bike. I mean, my brain's bouncing all around here, but like, you know, when you ride a bike and it might be a bit of a challenging ride, but you get the right cadence and you just get that rhythm and it just makes things easier. It's sort of the same thing with your trekking poles. It's not like they're these cumbersome things you have to drag. You can kind of just get into this rhythm and get that good cadence, and they just sort of move themselves and you just propel.
That was one point I made over the top of everything you had here was speed. And I know though, I say that from experience on days where I go back to when I lived in Alice Springs and I hiked a lot of short areas, and then I also did the Larapinta Trail. And there were some areas of the Larapinta Trail I'd walked two or three times just as a day hike.
Mm-hmm.
So that were sections that I thought, I've been here many times before. I'm not going to stop and look at everything. I'm actually want to spend more time in the bits I haven't been to or can't access by vehicle.
Yeah.
So there'd be days where I think that's just a get there day. I'm just going to put my pack on, just enjoy the scenery, get in the zone and walk. And having those poles is exactly what you're saying. You get in that cadence, you get in that rhythm. And once you're going, it's almost hard to stop and then get started again.
Mm-hmm.
Like your muscles are just in this motion and you just keep moving. And if it's nice flat area in particular, you can get up heaps more kilometers, plenty more kilometers if you've got a pair of hiking poles pushing you along as well.
So obviously, well, maybe not so obvious, but traction, you know, on slippery surfaces as well, whether that be muddy or, you know, slippery or whatever, they do act as a bit of an anchor. Like I've been on treks where it's not necessarily particularly challenging, but having to sort of reach out and anchor yourself on a pole as you're going past because you don't have much grip on the ground, trekking pole does the same thing.
Yep. Made a point here, more points of contact, which we sort of touched on. But if you think of it in terms of like climbing a ladder, they say always 3 points of contact on a ladder is safer than two.
Yeah.
Kind of the same concept on the ground. If you've got 4 points or probably at any given time, maybe 3 points or minimum of two, I suppose, you've at least got a trekking ground of 1 foot on the ground.
Mm.
So at any point in time, you've got 2 to 3 points of contact with the ground. So adds more stability.
They're also really good for things like I know if you're doing a trek that has a river crossing or a creek crossing or something, you can just use it as a depth gauge, trying to sort of work out where you're going. If it's sort of muddy or boggy grounds, you can use them for that as well.
Boggy Tasmanian tracks and things. If you're putting it out in front of you, you know what to expect before you
Like it just immediately disappear. Comes to mind this time when I was hiking in Finland and we were sort of going through this marshy bog area, and my two hiking companions went across very sort of much more around long way of on rocks and things. And I was like, there is literally nothing wrong with going here. And then one of these spots, it turned out it was like about 3 and a bit foot deep, and it just went one leg straight in like splits in this like deep boggy Finnish forest mud thing. And I was like, man, if I had a trekking pole, I could have tested that.
Yep. You would have known just before you fell in.
Correct.
So types of poles. Now, we sort of touched on this before, but I guess trying to, I mean, if you're not too specific on what you need and you're not counting grams and you don't have a massive budget, then any pole is really going to be a far sight better than just not having it. So don't overthink it.
Yeah.
If you're really gram counting or doing, you know, extra long kilometers or have something specific, then you can jump into some of these things that we'll mention here that are going to help you with your decision. But some of the points we've made.
Might also be worth mentioning quickly though that some local walking groups and walking clubs might have a gear library. So you might have the option of being able to borrow some poles to try them out to see if they're something that will work for you beforehand.
And there's a question of one or two. I don't know if we mentioned that here. A lot of people say get one. I think
I would
if
just go with two, personally.
Just
get two.
You can just use one if you like. If it's probably better to buy, and you can get some good quality brands.
They mostly come in a pair anyway.
That are affordable. But if you can only afford a really basic one, then that's better than none. But, yeah, try for two.
And I sort of like, for me personally, I like the concept of being fairly well balanced. Mm. And it's like if you're doing one and you've just got one side of your body moving and then you're going to swap and like it, just use two.
Yeah, absolutely. So types of poles. So the things we'll kind of brief over these, like the things you want to consider, I suppose. So you want to think about how they pack up because there's different ways they collapse down, different materials that they're made of, which is going to impact the weight.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll sort of go into these things in detail. Obviously adjustable or fixed, there's different variants in that depending on sections, but fixed is obviously you can't collapse it. Adjustable means you can collapse it down and it's got different lengths.
In terms of height, not pack. Usable height,
I see what you mean there, Yes, we'll touch on that lately, how they lock. Mm-hmm. So there's different locking mechanisms. Mm-hmm. It'll suit different activities. The handle material is a bit of a consideration. Some are definitely more comfortable than others.
And like features around the handle.
Yep, and accessories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, depending on accessories for a pole, sounds pretty funny, accessories. But if you've got specific activities, like you might be hiking but then want to use it for snow as well, you want to make sure you can get different type of baskets.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we've outlined that you might want to consider in what trekking pole do I need.
Yeah.
Probably say this a few more times in the episode. Don't overthink it. If you're really not sure, just get a decent set of poles that you can afford and you're going to love them.
Yeah. And I think one of the things is, especially when it comes to hiking poles, there are just so many available and it can be really difficult to sort of understand, well, why is that pair $300 and why is that pair $100? And, you know, like if I'm going to be spending money, I know the concept of don't overthink it is really important, but when you do have 20 or 30 to choose from, you also need a little bit of an idea to have the confidence to not overthink it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, the first way to minimize what your choice is going to be is probably the way they pack up.
Yep, agreed.
And it's generally telescopic, and that being that usually three sections. In fact, just about all of them nowadays come in three
pretty
sections.
Pretty much, yeah.
Telescopic being that it kind of collapses inside itself, a bit like I can't think of an example.
Well, just like your awning poles is one of them and an actual telescope.
One of those ones
good
that you like.
Telescopic poles.
Like the pirates go.
Yeah, exactly.
And folding. And folding, they kind of come apart, but they're joined. And then they kind of concertina into this Z shape and then pack up in kind of three sections.
Yeah.
The benefits to both. Telescopic is one straight pole they pack up easy. You have then two, if you've got a pair, you've got two sections that you can quite easily strap on the outside of a pack.
Mm-hmm.
There's no loose bits or anything to it. But they're generally a bit longer than the folding ones that you get, which pack up shorter, but it in a slightly fatter package, I suppose, is the best way to describe, because you'll end up with like three short sections next to each other.
Yeah, it's just more of like a bundle of sections as opposed to a longer pole. Yeah. But yes, they are shorter. And they're often short enough to put inside a backpack or like inside a drink bottle pocket on the outside of your bag or something like that, whereas the other poles won't be. Like they'll be sort of, I reckon probably the shortest telescopic pole I've seen is around 50 centimetres, whereas something like your foldable poles could be like 30.
30, yeah. So I reckon the choice between those is if you want to have a set of poles that you're not sure if you're going to use but you just want to keep them in your day pack, then probably a folding set is good because they're just going to sit in your day pack. You're not going to know they're there. If you know you're going to use them or you're going to be using them and then putting them on and off your pack all the time, then I think telescopic's probably better. And I say that from experience in that I would use them and then sometimes I'd stop using them and I'd literally just tuck them in the strap of my backpack so it just kind of sat there loose. Mm-hmm. If I had telescopic ones,
it would just kind of be
hanging loose all over the place. I'd have to put it in the pack or in a pocket on the side. But we're starting to split hairs really.
The other good thing to consider about folding poles, which often is a lot of customers that I've spoken to who are looking for trekking poles, they're doing a lot of overseas walks like the Camino or they're going to Machu Picchu or things like that. They're doing walking tours. Mm. And in that case, they're going on overseas travel, which means they have to pack everything they take. And in that case, things like folding poles are the only option really.
They're going to go in small bags a lot easier. Yep.
Yep.
Onto material.
Material. So aluminium and carbon are the two materials really. I mean, you can get some that have components of each, but pretty much it's going to mostly be an either or. So
we'll touch on carbon first because they're generally the expensive ones.
Yeah.
They all do the same job, but you go for carbon if you're really trying to save weight. If you're trekking long distances and you want to save an extra few grams in each hand while you're carrying it, an extra few grams in your pack when it's packed away and you're carrying it, then carbon's a good way to go. But you're going to be forking out a few dollars. Carbon trekking poles.
Yeah, they're also things, you know, carbon appeals a lot more to trail runners as well who are doing the really long distance because obviously when you're running, you don't want to be carrying anything heavy.
They are significantly lighter but more expensive.
Yes, and they are significantly lighter but they are also very, very strong, but their strength is not as versatile. Like, so carbon, in terms of, you know, just that straight downwards pressure, carbon is stronger than aluminium any day of the week. But anything to do with sort of flexing or torsion, because carbon essentially is just a series of fibers, that's where they become more vulnerable.
So not as much flex.
Correct. Yeah. And when they break, they're broken.
They kind of splinter.
It's sort of one of those things where you can't really do much there.
The downward force is an interesting one. We say that carbon is stronger and like a downward force if you're pointing the pole straight into the ground. But in reality, the locking mechanisms are probably going to fail well before the actual materials do on these poles anyway.
Yeah, that is true.
And they're within, we'll talk about that in the locking system shortly, but they're well in excess of what most people would deliver. So
yeah, definitely.
You're really going to choose carbon for the weight. That's the main thing.
You are going to choose carbon for the weight. And I think that it's whilst if you're looking at them between carbon and aluminium has a heck of a lot more pros. Mm. If you are someone who's gram counting, don't be afraid of carbon. Just be aware of the limitations and the way that they're ideally best used and you won't have any issues.
It's a bit like buying a Ferrari over a Toyota, right? The Ferrari is going to do the same job. It's just going to perform better and it's going to cost you more, but it'll still get you there like the Toyota will. The Toyota is a bit more versatile in how it can get you there.
Yeah.
Aluminium is going to come in. It's probably a lot of the confusion in aluminium when you look at, say, a pole that's $30 or $50 and another pole that's $170 and they're both aluminium or alloy. Mm. Probably the main difference is going to be not in the performance and how they operate, but in the quality of the actual aluminium and materials used. So there'll be varying qualities of aluminium. To keep it simple, if you're looking and trying to work it out, why that one's so much more expensive than the other one, it's probably just because the quality of the actual aluminium, the materials that go into that aluminium or alloy are better in the more expensive one. It's going to give you better flex, slightly better weight for the same performance, and potentially more durability, potentially more corrosion resistance as well.
So, yeah, those top tier brands work on trying to get the best aluminium for weight saving and things to get them pretty much as close to the benefits of something like carbon as possible, but with the benefits of that aluminium.
And they have that flex, like you said before, so that aluminium flex a bit.
The other thing that's really good about them is if you happen to bend them, for example, when you're out, it's not that difficult to sort of just bend them back into place. Like for the most part, there's not a huge, unless you're talking about a clean snap, there's not a huge amount that you probably couldn't do a bit of a bush mechanics type DIY on in the field to keep your poles going.
If it's a telescopic pole, it might not fold up anymore, but you might still be able to use it enough to get through the trip.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
So, adjustable or fixed, are we moving on or did you have something else to say?
No, I was going to say just don't get too caught up in the aluminium or carbon. If you're in a specialist field, carbon's probably your thing. Mm-hmm. If you just want a good set of trekking poles, then aluminium or alloy.
And you can, I mean, we talked about aluminium sometimes or aluminium, carbon, sorry, often being a lot more expensive, but you can get carbon poles cheaper than some aluminium poles because those aluminium poles have just been designed with heaps of technical features and outstanding performance. So it's not necessarily straightforward, one's cheaper than the other because there are other factors to consider.
There's always variance.
Yeah. So adjustable or fixed. Now, fixed poles generally will fall into that weight saving category of like ultralight hikers or trail runners. And I find, I mean, not all of them, but a lot of them are carbon because fixed fits into that category. So does carbon. They're good to go together, but they really do lack versatility. And I would say the applications for use, like you say, if you're a specialist in your field or your particular activity, they might be okay. But just for general hiking, they're probably not going to be your best bet. And so when we say fixed, we mean that the poles open and lock to one set height. You can't adjust the height or change the height of the poles. Whereas with your adjustable poles, they're a lot more beneficial because when you are hiking, obviously, whether or not you're on the flats or you're going uphill or downhill, your biomechanics and change. And so when you're going uphill, you will want a shorter pole, and that could be 5 to 10 centimeters shorter because obviously your hands and where that pole is landing is going to be much higher than your feet.
Yep.
And the inverse, obviously going downhill, you might want a longer pole, 5 to 10 centimeters. And so having the ability to have a pole that can cater for that means that you're going to have a much more enjoyable experience.
Yes. So for general outdoors, hiking, even running, if you not a specialist in the field, adjustable is going to cater to a much broader range of activities. Whereas the fixed ones, Black Diamond generally do them, usually in their folding style.
They do FLZ fed.
There's fixed, less, there's less moving parts, I suppose, is the one benefit to that. But you set them up and they're 100 and whatever meters long.
Yeah.
You can't change the length of it. You're fixed with that length.
Yeah.
But you save a bit of weight there as well.
That's also probably something worth mentioning. Like I haven't actually made a note of it here, but when you are measuring your general height or the size that you want for trekking poles, because they will come in a range of different sizes, even if they are adjustable, you're generally standing up, you know, with your elbow bent 90 degrees next to your body, and you're roughly measuring from your palm to the ground, and then probably adding an extra 5 to 10 centimeters of grip length, right? And that gives you a ballpark.
Yep.
So if you say measure 110 centimeters or 111 centimeters, you're probably going to want a pole that covers an adjustment range between 1 meter to 1 meter 20. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're 130, you want one that goes from 1 meter 20 to 140. So that's something to bear in mind when you're considering the sizing that you're going to choose.
And usually for the general use poles, the kind of affordable ones, they've got a fairly big range of adjustment to cater for all of those activities.
Yep. And I mean, there are also, you can do a bit of a Google and find them. There are some sort of general guides or rules of thumb in terms of what height trekking pole is right for you based on your height as a person. But then also I look at you and I'm like, you're really tall and you have really, really long limbs, and I'm an average height for a person, but I have really short legs and short arms. And so someone else who might be my height while it's a guide, they might actually have a different measurement. So, yeah, you can use your height as a guide, but I'm going for the 90-degree arm angle to ground measurement personally.
And you might find your own comfort zone anyway. Best tip there is maybe see if you can borrow a pair from a friend, use them for a few hikes, take note of how long it is, and then buy something that caters to that length.
Yep.
Locking mechanisms, which you touched on before, generally two types, a twist lock, which is the telescopic style.
Mm-hmm.
Both telescopic style come with twist lock and flick lock. Now, flick lock, to describe how you would identify them easily just by looking at them. Twist lock, and each brand's got their own name of their locking system, but twist lock is generally, it's got a smooth sort of look to it. Doesn't have any bits sticking out apart from sort of a plastic ferrule.
Like a little collar type thing, yeah.
At the bottom of one section, that the section underneath disappears inside. The locking mechanism is generally on the inside, the part that's disappearing inside. And when you twist that, it's got a little cam on it that locks inside the upper pole and locks it in place. That's what a twist lock does.
Really similar to some awning poles that have that.
Yes.
You know, same premise.
And the better quality poles, generally that twist lock will hold without as much force to try and lock it into place. And then there's a flick lock. Now, the flick lock doesn't have the same streamline look. It's actually got a lever on the outside. It sticks out a little bit. Telescopic feature still works the same, where the bottom section goes into the top section, but the flick lock generally sits on the top section and tightens that top section over the section that's going inside to lock it in place.
Yeah.
Pros and cons for each?
Well, the twist lock, classically, I think probably one of the biggest problems with them is, especially if you're hiking and you're tired and you're not paying heaps of attention, if you happen to pull your pole too far out, or you potentially even pull the segments apart, or you go too far, you can damage that twist lock mechanism on the inside. Whereas with your flick lock or lever lock type poles, you could pull all the pieces apart if you really wanted to, and then, you know, put them back in together. There's nothing internal that's going to prevent that from working because that locking thing is on the outside.
Yep.
And the lever lock and flick locks also generally, over time, or any locking mechanism over time, will loosen or sort of wear, whereas those flick lock and lever locks have little screws and ways that you can, you know, maintain them and tighten them and things like that. So they're a much more user-friendly option than those twist lock ones, I think.
So, different type. I mentioned a cam before, but there's also spreading mechanisms inside. So as long as you keep it pretty tidy, then most of them are pretty good. But you're right, the twist lock has a mechanism that disappears inside the pole. So, yeah, if you get dirt and water in there, then it's sitting in that mechanism, whereas the other one's on the outside. Probably main use case that I've had in the past that you would choose one over the other is if you're in a cold environment, you're wearing gloves, the flick lock or the lever lock, the lever on the outside is much easier to use than trying to grip a small pole.
That's a really good point.
Mittens or anything like that. So if you're in a cold environment, particularly if you wear mittens or if you're wearing thick snow type gloves, then a flick lock or a lever lock, which most of the ski type ones will have it for that reason. If you talk about holding power, and I'm going by Leckie's data here, and I'm pretty sure it's still the same nowadays that it's always been, that the twist lock, so the ones that lock inside the tube, generally have a higher holding force. Maybe, and I'm pulling figures out of the air here, maybe it's like 140 kilos.
Just go with it, Ben.
Whereas the lever lock is probably, it's about data, right?
Yeah. Just go with it.
Whereas the lever lock is probably around sort of the 90 to 100 kilos.
Yeah.
That's still a fair bit of force. If you're continually applying that much force to your trekking pole, then if you're using it for something you shouldn't be, or you've fallen or something and you've had a fraction of a second where you've needed to put that much force on it to rely on it.
But it's not, we're not talking continuous.
No, no.
Yeah.
And if you're falling on it in that instance, you hope you're not bending it as well because you're going to have more than just the holding power if the mechanism is an issue. So, that's generally the difference between the two. I guess if you're in really shrubby areas, you're using your trekking poles and you're kind of, it's going in vegetation, that flick lock can get a bit caught up.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting much sort of more streamlined nowadays than they ever used to be. Mm. whereas the twist lock is just streamlined, so it's not going to get caught up or grab branches and stuff as you go. But in reality, we're starting to
split hairs, sort of thing.
We're tracking vehicles, you're searching for ideas on why you should buy one over the other.
Yeah.
And don't overthink it in the end. If there's a really good deal on one or the other and you don't have a specific use case,
yeah,
just get the one that the good deal's on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, the other one is those FLZ poles or the folding poles, Z-fold poles, so whatever you want to call them.
Black diamond ones.
Yeah, Leckie do some as well. So they're the three segments that are essentially all joined by a nylon cable, I think predominantly would sort of be nylon, like a rubber, like silicon coated nylon cable or something along those lines. Yep. So what they essentially do is you know, they're all joined and then they slide over each other and then the top part or the top segment on the pole, you pull up and it sort of clicks into place or locks into place with like a little pin, or it's like a little collar with an internal pin, and that creates tension across, you know, that line or nylon cord or whatever through it, and that keeps your poles in place.
There was a video on that I think you did online of one of the black diamond ones when they first came out that obviously wasn't described really well in the instructions because so many people have watched that and said, oh, thank God,
because there's
how
a point where you can sort of put them together and pull them and you're like, oh, yeah, these are good to go, but then they collapse on you and it's just because you've got to get this click and this lock thing happening to make sure you've got that proper tension and they're not just going to loosen up and collapse. But anyway, you can still, even with fixed length, folded poles, you can, some of those can still be adjustable. So you might have a combination of something like a click lock to get the tension on the pole, but then the grip segment has got a lever lock or a flick lock, and that can move up and down to give you the height that you need.
Yep. In that instance, you've got a flick lock at the top and a really smooth pole at the bottom.
Correct.
So if that vegetation thing I talked about earlier was an issue, then that's the instance where a flick lock one is probably not going to be as much of an issue.
Yeah, whereas you do have other ones that have each of the segments have a small adjustment in them. So you're height adjusting over the entire pole, not just one section at the top. So you'd have more lever locks then in that case on the pole.
More of them are coming out with lever locks now, I think. Yeah, ease of use. Handles. Another one of those things that you can
do. Grips, handles, whatever you want to call them.
I mean, we'll talk about, there's materials and there's also the shape of the handles. Maybe we'll just talk about materials first. A basic affordable pole is probably just going to have a molded nylon or plastic type handle, which is fine. It's going to do the job. Limitations you might find if you're using them for long hikes, particularly in hot or humid environments, they can kind of get warm, slimy, maybe rub a little bit.
Yeah, you get some hot spots.
Yeah. So not as comfortable.
They're okay. If you're getting poles like that, they're generally going to be an okay beginner pole for someone who likes to do the occasional day hike, I would say.
Yep.
But if you're doing anything more than that, you would want to probably invest in something just that next bit up.
Absolutely. And there's also foam and there's cork. Now, I think the foam has improved a lot since I'm talking about the ones I used many years ago. The foam I found used to kind of over time get a bit of gunk and grime in it and it started to feel slimy.
Smell a bit, and like your dead skin cells gross.
But I think the foam technology has changed a lot and it's much denser foam now. So it's probably not as applicable as what it was. And I'm talking, it would have been 10 plus years ago when I used this pole that I went kind of manky.
They also often have like antibacterial properties or some kind of whiz bang component that's patented by the brand name to make it sound fancy that's imbued in the foam to stop it from smelling or going manky.
Which probably has some effect.
Yeah.
It's not going to revolutionize how you use trekking poles. They're probably the most common, or I'd say the most versatile and popular, are the cork handles. And when we say cork, it's not really just cork. Some of them are.
It's like a molded handle, but then it has like a cork layer over the top. And often it's only a couple of mils thick, you know, and it just goes around the handle. So if you were to damage it or gash it or whatever, there would still be handle underneath. So it's sort of like a cork coating.
Yeah.
But like merino, it's a natural material and it just feels really good.
Yeah.
Molds to your hand over time, doesn't stink, absorbs your sweat.
Just be
looks
conscious
fancy.
That some look like cork, but they're a cork in a resin or something like that. So yeah. They have that cork look, but they're not. You know when you pick it up that it's not going to have that absorbent kind of breathable feel that the cork
there
does.
There is some that I was like, ooh, cork, and I picked them up and I was like, oh, no, these are just foam, cork. But it's printed with a cork pattern.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, you know, generally I would say cork would be the more preferred option for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But then again, at the same time,
a bit more expensive usually.
Yeah, they tend to be a little bit more expensive. And I think foam these days, like you were saying, the technology and the design around those sort of grips, you know, they're sort of, they can be a bit of a much of a muchness.
I've used foam and I've been really happy with foam.
Yeah.
The one, only one we haven't mentioned is rubber, and some of them do have kind of a rubbery feel to it. So the plastic ones are a molded nylon, or I suppose it's molded nylon or polypropylene perhaps, and they have got that smooth plasticky feel. Rubber ones have got a bit more of a grippy feel, I guess better for grip, potentially not as good for rubbing if you're talking long hours with it in your hand. I think, foam is probably the best all-rounder. But once again, if there's a good deal on one with a rubber handle and you don't have a specific use case, then just get the one that's the good
for it.
Yep.
Now, wrist straps. I mean, I have used them with and without wrist straps. They're generally sort of left and right because the shape of your hand and ergonomically the way you hold your poles, there's a bit of a difference, thicker in some areas and blah, 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 blah. They can be really good because it means that you have a bit less sort of grip fatigue over time because they just help keep your pole where it needs to be. But then also, if you come a cropper, they're stuck to you.
Yeah.
And that's something I found really funny because I like to watch fail videos. I've just given you an insight into me. I have seen a fail video of somebody come a cropper hiking with poles and their poles have just sort of stuck to them and just become in this mess of them falling down the hill. But it's like if you don't have the wrist grips on and you fall, your poles just fall to the side and you just work out what you need to do with your body and you're fine and you pick your poles up and you keep going. So it just, I mean, I can see why they're there, but at the same time, I don't think that they're necessarily something that you have to be like, oh, I have to use these. Just work it out for yourself.
Yeah. I think they're good. And I so two reasons why I like the straps. One is partly touches on what you said. If I'm stopping to look at a map and I've got trekking poles, they're attached to my wrists, I can just let them go. And there's, as you mentioned, still attached to me.
Yeah.
I can look at the map. I don't have to lean them against something or whatever. And you're leaning against a tree, the wind blows.
Like
then
pick
they're on,
them up.
They're on the ground and you've got to bend over with your, you know, 15 kilo pack to pick them up. They're just hanging on your arms. They're still there. But definitely grip fatigue. If you, and this isn't that common, well, going back a while now, wasn't that commonly known that if you, you actually, there is a left and a right.
Yeah.
The strap is ergonomically fits around your wrist. And you tighten it in such a way that you should almost be able to use the pole, not really gripping the actual handle that much, but the pressure is on the strap.
Yeah.
So you're balancing this between your wrist and the hand. So have a look at that with the straps, because it's commonly people think, oh, it's just so I don't lose them. But it does actually help with that grip fatigue. So have a look into that. I don't know if we've
especially
done any
if you're doing
on
a
that.
Really long, you know, if you're doing long days, like if you're doing 25K plus days.
Yeah.
And it's multi-day, it's really something that you're going to want to be using.
If it's long, flat, hot ground that you're walking on and you can walk without having to grip the pole as much, as you've just got a loose grip just to guide it and your hands are swinging and the strap is what's sort of propelling you along, your hands aren't getting as sweaty because you've got more air flowing around it.
Yeah.
And it's a really good use case then.
Yep. Nice.
Anti-shock.
Yeah, we have I'm going to jump back up here
something?
Because we have touched on left and right. Some poles with their ergonomic grips, the grips will be slightly different shaped on the left and right poles as well as the wrist guards because it sort of depends on how your hand is holding the poles. Some poles generally, you know, will just have – they're not necessarily ergonomic, so they're just going to be the same handle on both poles. And then you have women's poles and men's poles. And a lot of people are like, well, what's the difference? Realistically, the only difference between women and men's poles that I've come across or that I can work out is that the grip on a women's version tends to be just a little tiny bit shorter and thinner, so not as fat, because, you know, statistically women do have smaller hands than men. Like, your hands are huge. My partner's hands are, like, huge. Mine are, you know, I've got stubby hands and I think they're quite, you know, thick, but they're smaller.
Yep.
I haven't met a dude who has hands even remotely close to my size. They're
huge. We should just call them, like, big grip, small grip or something. They really shouldn't.
Yeah, and it's like, and that was another point I was going to make, is that just because they do have smaller grips doesn't mean that they're only for women. It's the same with backpacks, right? You can have a normal backpack or a unisex backpack and then you have a women's fit backpack.
Yeah.
The only difference being the way that the harness, you know, the waistband is shaped, and then also the shoulder width. And it's like, if you are either a man or a woman, whatever, and you're a little bit slighter or smaller in stature or frame, the women's fit pack will probably work better for you than the unisex one. But it doesn't matter that it's a women's pack. Similar with hiking poles.
I think we're starting to see labeling come through a little bit differently on some of those things. Now, before we move on to Anti-Shock 2, we didn't mention there's a pole called the Wonderfront.
The lucky one.
I think that's how you say it. So two other bits to talk about with the grip. Some of them have a grip that's straight, so the pole comes up and the grip sits straight on the top. Some of them are actually angled a bit as well.
Yeah.
So have a go in the shop when you look at poles and see what sits comfortably, because sometimes it's a bit more comfortable to have your wrist tilted forward a little bit more.
Yeah.
So some poles are set up with that. Generally, you pay a little bit more for those features, but that can make it a little bit more comfortable on your wrist.
And then, I think sometimes poles, sorry to cut over you, I think sometimes poles that are also marketed to Nordic walkers will have more of that as well, because they're doing a larger sort of range of motion with their arms. They need that extra.
Yep. And the other type is the Wonderfront or the gun grip style pole. Now, they're kind of set up to use it in two ways. So it's a deluxe version of that pole you might get from a chemist, right? That's just a stability pole,
like as you get older, sort of thing.
If you need something because you've had something with your injury on your leg or something, you just need that stability. So a regular walking stick, and these are a deluxe version of that. They have the same locking mechanisms, either twist lock or flick lock, but the grip is a gun style grip. So you can use it in an upright manner. Use it in an upright manner and grip it like a regular trekking pole. You've got that flat bit over the top of your hand, but you can also shorten it down and use it on your side directly for stability. And generally they just come as a single pole, because they are designed just as one pole for stability rather than using two for speed. But if you do want a deluxe version of that walking pole that you, rather than buying one from a chemist, then that's a good option.
Yeah, nice one. So the anti-shock.
What do you reckon?
Well, I don't know. It's like basically what an anti-shock is as you would expect. It has some sort of suspension system within the handle and the pole, which means that you can physically – I mean, I've got a video on it. I think I did some Black Diamond Pursuit poles recently. I did the normal and the shock version. But when you hold the pole and the handle, you just, you know, you push the handle and it's got a bit of a bounce. It's got a bit of a spring in it.
Like you're talking – 1 centimeter or 2 centimeters.
So it's not huge, but I guess it's sort of enough that if you're hitting the ground hard, there is that little bit of shock absorption through the handle. And generally, I think not necessary. But if you are somebody, because I've done, I did a bit of research around the shock versus anti-shock, and realistically, they're just really helpful for people who have had ankle, knee, or joint issues where they are going to just be more vulnerable generally when they're hiking, and things like jarring and stuff like that puts them at risk of injury. So those anti-shock features would be a definite consideration for people who would fall into that category. But otherwise, if you don't fall into that category, I think they're just a bit of a luxurious extra.
I'd agree. I've got two points there. Definitely anti-shock if you're using it urban wise all the time on hard ground.
That's true.
Like you said, it's always the clack on hard ground. Mm-hmm. If you're using it on unsealed trails all the time, I think it's an overkill. And my second point was a small story from a long time ago that I've used trekking poles that had anti-shock that developed a squeak because of the moving part. And I couldn't. And I
would literally have just thrown them in the bush and kept going.
I couldn't stop the squeak. Oh, I've not heard of anyone else have that issue.
Obviously just got some dust in them or something.
I must have pulled them apart. I can't remember the whole story, but I just remember. I just remember squeak. So every step was squeak, 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 squeak. And I couldn't get rid of it. So, I
remember, you know, Lise, who used to work at Snowy's. Yeah. We got sort of like a mutual friend. She has a similar story, except it was when she was away hiking with someone for like 5 or 6 days in New Zealand. They were always hiking in front of her and their pack had a squeak on every step. Squeak. And they could nothing. And she just the whole hike behind and like, I want to kill you, throw your bag off the cliff. Anyway, yeah, that would drive me insane. Yeah.
Especially the end of the day when you're tired and you're just like, I just want to get to camp and I just want this damn pole to stop squeaking. That was well over 10 years ago that I would have used that pole, and I'm sure the technology has come a long way since then. So I haven't used one in an environment where I got it probably as dirty or wet and manky as I did back then. But it's a mental bookmark that I've got that makes me think, although I think I've still got, have got some anti-shock poles actually that haven't developed a squeak. Okay. I haven't used them for a while.
Okay.
But if you're using them in really environments where they're going to get dirty, dusty, like really dirty and dusty, and just have a think that anti-shock thing is another moving part that's going to get bits of gunk and stuff in it. So correct. That's probably the only consideration I make there.
So last but not least, accessories. And you wouldn't necessarily think about accessories, and there aren't a huge amount. It's just something to consider that some of those more top tier poles have a bit more flexibility than, say, more like a basic entry level pole, in the sense that your brands like Black Diamond and Leckie, which do tend to be a bit more top tier, will potentially have the option for you to be able to replace tips or swap tips from carbide to rubber, or have a range of different rubber feet covers or boot covers.
Yep. So there's kind of two things you're talking about there. There's the tip that comes with the pole. Is stuck on the pole. Leckie just pushes on.
The lower section tip. Are you talking about the black plastic thing?
Bottom. And it has, the good ones have a carbide tip on the end, which is really hard wearing.
Yep.
Cheaper ones will have a steel tip that will burr over time. And then you've got feet and stuff that fit over the top of that cap as well.
Yes, but also the physical, you know, the lower section tip, which is that black bit, but then also the little tiny tip on the end, that carbide tip that I'm talking about. Some brands, especially ones that are steel, you can't necessarily change those. Yeah. Whereas some brands like Leckie, you can just, once that carbide tip wears down or the rubber tip wears down, you can unscrew them and you can screw some ones back in.
Yep.
And then some brands you can also, you know, it's not necessarily easy, but you can heat or boil off that black bit if it gets trashed and you can put on a new set. So there are accessories in the sense of, can your pole be
maintainable
and have replaceable parts so that you can just make one purchase that will last you forever versus is this a pole that won't allow me to do that, which means that I might need to replace them at some stage.
Yeah. And you can even go further to just replacing sections. I think with Leckie poles, you can just replace a section if you want, you don't have to replace the whole pole.
Yeah.
And then the caps that go on the end. So you can have your carbide tip, which is great for off-road, dirt, trails, muds, grass, et cetera. And if you use that
are noisy though, man.
If you use it around the city, it's going clack, clack, clack.
Yeah, clack, clack,
so
clack.
You can get a little rubber cap that just pushes over the end. So when you're in the city, it's not, it softens that noise.
Yeah. And also you can get funny shaped ones as well. If you are someone that's into Nordic walking, it's like a funny little boot for the bottom of your pole. And it's like a weird fern head almost. It's just a weird shape thing.
And then some of them have metal spikes in them too. So they grip on, a bit like snowshoes, they grip on snow and that sort of thing. Yeah. So there's all sorts of, if you get up to a higher end pole, there's all sorts of accessories you can get.
You get like baskets so your pole doesn't sink into mud or snow, and then they sort of act like a mud guard on your bike where you're not getting splash back and things like that.
That's a good point. Actually, the basket, you don't have to use that. And I almost never use it. If I'm on hard ground where the pole's not sinking,
there's just no point.
It.
Yeah.
If you're using it on sand all the time, a small basket's probably handy because it stops it sinking. If you're on snow, really soft stuff, you can get bigger baskets to go on there.
Yeah.
No one's been down the bling path yet. You can't get like diamantes bling for your
You can't
accessorize.
Pimp my hiking pole. Pimp my trekking pole.
Maybe we should start a Snowy's range of trekking pole accessories.
I feel like we could do another YouTube show called Pimp My Trekking Pole, and people just send in their poles, and we just do a craft session where we just like bejazzle and we just turn it into this like custom pole.
Careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for.
My daughters will come in and help with that.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I know. That'd be hilarious.
It's
going to
be a big jar of diamantes that you can stick.
Rhinestones.
I'll be there, Dad.
Oh, goodness me.
All right. I was ready to go over accessories, and we've covered off in that.
Yeah, because there's not much, are there? There's really not that much.
And I guess we've covered off mainly on trekking slash a bit of trail running type poles, mainly trekking. But if you do go into Nordic walking, it opens up even more. You can get gloves with clips that attach the pole to your hand. Nordic walking is not a thing in Australia.
Not really, no, but it's big in Europe.
In Europe, yeah. So we'd be naive to sit here and try and say we knew much
I
about it.
I can't tell you anything about Nordic walking, sorry.
Yeah, we sell the brands that sell the poles, but we don't really sell those Nordic poles. So,
yeah. Cool. Yep. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to this episode. We will see you again next time. And don't forget to join in the conversation, whether that be in the comments under YouTube or over on our Facebook group.
Yep.
And have a good rest of the week. Catch you later.
See you next time.